You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show. And now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning, good morning. How are you? It's Aaron Carrera. It's Thursday, July 25th. It is 10:01 if you're listening live. And if you're listening in the archives, it's whatever day and time it is, wherever you happen to be. So thanks for tuning in. Happy to be here with you. And today, here we are. It is getting toward the very end of summer. It's not really hotter than the blazes. That's just a phrase I like to say because my dad always says, oh, it's hotter than the blazes outside. And I just love all those old-fashioned way turns of phrase that my dad uses. So here is what we're going to be talking about today, which is when you're starting to feel discombobulated, dissatisfied with life, annoyed, angry, frustrated with the world, how to instead just be your own damn self, right? And just say, screw it. And I'm saying this because the other day I was talking to a friend of mine about some dissatisfactions that I had. And I was like, you know, I can't wait till I'm like old, because I'm middle-aged right now. I can't wait till I'm old. And I'm just like one of those ladies who's just amazingly dressed and has my, like always with my own sense of style. And I'm just drinking my own wonderful champagne cocktail or martini out of a little coupe glass. And I'm delivering high dudgeon and snark and having a great old time and not giving a shit what anybody thinks about me. And my friend says, isn't that kind of you now? It's like, I am the old lady I've always wanted to be, and I'm not even that old. It's great. It's fabulous. I mean, it's sort of like all I needed to hear to pull me out of this just awful, terrible, pointless, useless funk was like, aren't you already what you want to be? Aren't you already what you want to be? And I just allowed myself to ruminate and wonder on that idea. Like, yeah, there's a version of Aaron where I'm healthy, where I'm whole, where there are not problems, where the problems that exist are taken care of or will be taken care of. Like, there's a version of my life where I don't have to engage in the mind fuckery around, okay, everything is wrong. Okay, how am I going to solve this problem? Oh no, my Amazon package came punctured and now I'm going to have to go get on the line with Amazon and have to chat with them about getting a replacement or getting it paid back, blah, blah, blah. And I don't want to get the delivery person in trouble, you know, and I don't want to, but I still don't want to have to pay $15 for a room spray that spilled all over the place, you know, right? I mean, aren't these, of course, like I was going to say, aren't these the things that we fill our days with these honestly inconsequential minutiae of injustices? And it's also like, of course, we're also filling our days with real concerns like, oh, I don't know, you know, global politics, the climate, all that stuff. None of these things are unimportant. But at what point are you just fighting yourself? At what point is your mind just running away with you? Remember that old, not fairy tale, but the old nursery rhyme and the about running away with the spoon, the dish ran away with the spoon, right? Isn't that really what we're doing? I'm not saying when we're actively looking for solutions, right? Not when we're looking to really be well or really help or really create justice or really heal. But I mean, so much of the stuff that we spend so much of our time on is, hey, diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon, the little dog laughed to see such sport, and the dish ran away with the spoon, right? So how do we catch ourselves? And What if there's value in worrying, right? There's not, by the way. I remember years ago, everybody take a deep breath in. I remember years ago, when I first got my little dog, and I worried about him all the time. I would leave the house, I would worry that he would be okay. I would worry whether or not he would get into something and eat some poison and die. Now, I didn't, it's not like I didn't have a poison garden. I didn't have poison lying around the house other than, hidden away in the form of cleaning solutions under my sink. I didn't have things. About the worst trouble my little dog was going to get into is if I didn't get home in time to take him out and he pooped or peed in the house, which would be totally reasonable if it was my fault, right? Which, therefore, I didn't let that happen. As all, like ex with a few very ex extenuating circumstances, of course. So I worried and worried, and it reminded me of w when I was hanging out once with a certain relative of mine, who I won't say who, and she just worried. Her hobby was worrying, and hanging out with her was literally taxing because she worried about every little thing. And I was like, I gently asked, "Have you ever considered maybe you worry too much?" She was like, "Oh, well, you don't have kids. When you have children, you'll understand." Well, of course, I never did have kids. And I know that having children does create a different level of stakes with the state of the world. And yet, for millennia, people have had the same fears and the same worry. And if you've ever read that book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, you know that by data, we actually live in a less violent time now than in known human history by data. And in fact, violent crime has gone far down in this country by data. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be vigilant. I'm just saying there's a difference between worrying and awareness. There's a difference between worrying and actually just taking care of an issue when it pops up and planning ahead, right? So I was thinking that a lot of our dissatisfaction with the world, where does that come from? Are we really dissatisfied with the world? Or did we have an idea about the way the world was supposed to be, and then the world isn't matching that? Trust me, I'm the queen of this. I want people to be kind and nice and care about homeless people and for there to be no homeless people because we care so much, we figured out that problem. And for the climate to be good, for us to understand that the climate is good and not be bamboozled or, like not be surprised later if the climate's not good, right? I want all of that. But then it's like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What I want is the, not the world I live in. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't care about homeless folks or try to help. I'm saying dissatisfaction comes from contemplating on what falls short of your wishes or your expectations, right? It's not that dissatisfaction is useless. If you hire somebody to do a job for you, and they fall short, and you're dissatisfied, that's okay. There are ways to approach it, right? You can ignore it. You can say, oh, maybe we didn't set the parameters ahead of time. Let's talk about what this should look like. You can say, I'm very dissatisfied with this work. I would like you to do better. You can say it however you want. But when it comes to our own internal discontent, right? Our own internal unease and dislike for the conditions of our own life, and this feeling of like there's something wrong. I really think that that is actually a trap. I really think that, this is something that we've been thinking about and writing about and meditating about for thousands of years. At least hundreds. And the Buddha, of course, talks about desire as the root of dissatisfaction. And I don't think that desire in and of itself is necessarily wrong. It's part of being human. But I wonder, what if we could just say to ourselves every time we get dissatisfied, is this something that I really, is this something real, right? Can I really check in on this? Am I really dissatisfied and is with something that I need to adjust? Is this information from my psyche saying, you really don't want to live this way, let's change? Or is this a general malaise and a general virus that we've all fallen into? And we can blame social media, we can blame media, we can blame cultural consciousness, whatever. Blaming whatever is increasing or encouraging our general malaise and our general dissatisfaction in life, especially if it doesn't lead to solutions or it doesn't lead to greater, deeper understanding, or if it doesn't lead to a recommitment to love or a recommitment to our dreams or a recommitment even to those desires. Blaming isn't really going to help, right? If it's like, why life sucks, life sucks. Life is hard, life sucks, right? But does it? I mean, when you're a baby, life doesn't suck. You eat, you poop, you sleep, you giggle, and the world giggles with you. Yes, once you start to get a sense of yourself and separate out from just being and just existing, it's an important aspect of life, or else it wouldn't happen. Otherwise, we'd just all be babies, and some other species would be parents, right? Which might actually be the case, who knows? But once we get this sense of ourselves, it's actually still totally possible to allow life, yes, to sometimes not be perfect or not go well, to actually allow life to be beautiful, to allow life to be beautiful, right? So in a way, what I'm talking about is just, you know, the stuff of being alive, right? Not material stuff, not my room spray that came punctured from Amazon, not which is all over my hands. My hands smell amazing, by the way, just strong. Not the stuff of, like, you know, our things, although also our things, but I mean, like, the stuff of being alive, of being human alive, our intellectual stuff, our thoughts, our philosophies, our beliefs, our emotional experiences, our social experiences, all of that. And we have a lot of human stuff, a lot of that kind of stuff. And just like physical stuff, when we collect stuff, naturally you want more stuff, right? And I feel like that helps trap us in our dissatisfaction, because then you're always grasping for more, that bigger, better, stronger, faster, other, not what I have. Not what I have. The problem isn't the stuff, right? The problem isn't, believe me, actually, or don't believe me, go find out for yourself, right? The problem isn't even like, oh, I'm afraid of politics. Oh, I'm afraid of climate. Oh, homeless people exist. That's not even the problem. It is the idea that you need it to be different and that you are powerless around that. What if, when you get dissatisfied like that, what if you were like, well, there are things that I can work on to change because I do believe in justice and I want to work on that. And then I'm also going to allow that the world is as it is. And I need only to live with myself. I wonder if every time you catch yourself fighting, I know a lot of people won't want to do this. A lot of people will be like, no, I need to fight. It's like people who weigh themselves every day to make sure they stay on track. I'm like, okay, if that works for you, all that does to me is just give me anxiety about the number. But I don't think the number's gone up or down by that much for me in the last couple decades. I don't ever look. That's me. You do you, right? That's my whole thing. Whatever works for you is great. But what if you just tried? And the reason why is to give yourself a little bit of a break. Because I'm going to get back to being the person you've always dreamed to be in just a second. What if you just said nah? What if you noticed your mind getting really freaked out about something and bringing up a topic, and you said to yourself, "Hey, mind, I see you're bringing up this topic of nuclear disarmament. Is there anything I can do about that right now? Yes, I can go give $15 to an organization. Or yes, I am, a world leader, and I can write an essay about why we need to consider this. Or yes, I can write an essay to my local newspaper, a letter to the editor about it. But after that, continuing to ruminate on that actually becomes irresponsible to myself and my fellows because I become insufferable to myself and my fellows. It's one thing to address issues. It's another thing to torture myself about it. So, whatever that answer is, right? I'm always giving the yeah, but response, right? Yeah, but Aaron, it's a really big deal and I do need to think about it. It's like, okay, sure. But you don't. You don't need to fight yourself. You don't need to battle your mind. Now, your mind is going to fight itself. Your mind is going to fight itself. That is the nature of the human mind. It is going to fight itself and or other sometimes, or for some of us, all the time or a lot. But you don't need to engage. You could just say, meh, no, thank you. No, I'm actually not interested in that at this time, right? It's sort of like you could consider when your mind starts to fight with itself on your turf, on your free time, or when you're at work, or when you're in the middle of doing something really fun. If your mind starts to fight itself, you can actually literally say, like, oh, hello, telemarketer who called me in the middle of me watching television. No, thank you. I'm not interested in giving right now. And hang up. Hang up on the mind. Guys, I'm surprised. This is a deviation I wasn't expecting to take because I wanted to talk just about being glorious and yourself. But I feel like this is the preface to that because there's all of these ways that we get in our own way, right? It's like, okay, well, I want to be this glorious, amazing person who dresses a certain way and, because it's fun. Right, because I see myself this way. Like, how do I see myself as a person? And how do I see my life? What's my vision for my life? And how do I basically not force myself to fulfill that every day, but just orient myself in that direction? Well, a part of what's keeping us from that is all of that stuff, right? All of that sudden out of nowhere anxiety, all of that sudden out of nowhere dissatisfaction, all of that sudden out of nowhere. Emotional breakdown or the way that we exacerbate everything. I'm not saying that we shouldn't pay attention, but have you ever noticed how we are starting to identify every single little thought and feeling and discomfort as some major issue, right? Like teenagers. Okay. I've worked with teenagers for several summers. I would go teach musical theater to teens. And last summer, when Taylor Swift released a new album, I was in the dorms with all of the girls, aged 12 to 17. And the night that Taylor Swift released her new album, all of the girls began weeping and crying and hugging and dancing and weeping and crying and weeping and crying for hours on end. And they would listen to this, I don't know if it was a single or an album. They were listening to this stuff over and over again and weeping, and they would knock on my door, Erin, come hug us. And the first time I did, because I get it, I was a drama queen. I mean, literally, guys, it was a musical theater camp. What else could I have expected? I was a drama queen too when I was a teenager and hormonal, and I didn't know what to do with all of my big feelings and all my big dreams and all my big desires, all my hormones and all my things that were happening to me as a 14-year-old. So the first time I was like, okay, girls, sure, I'll come give you a hug. And then they knocked again. I was like, you girls are going to have to learn how to deal with your hormones. And they were like, what? Literally, one of them just stopped crying and looked at me like I had interrupted her. And she was like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, go have fun if you want to, but you're going to have to learn how to surf your hormones on your own. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to teach you how to act and how to sing. And they were like, Oh, okay. And then they went and they cried by themselves. And I don't care what they thought of me, if they thought it was mean, but I watched it. The girl went from being totally in drama, one of the girls, the other girl kept weeping, totally in drama to like she just dropped it for a second. Then she looked at her other friend who was still in drama and then went back to the drama. And I was like, that's cool. Just don't involve me. I'm not interested. I'll see you tomorrow morning for our rehearsal. I'll see you tomorrow morning at breakfast, actually, I guess. Right? Because I was just not having it. But I feel like I'm not saying that there aren't more issues with teenagers today because I hear there are. But were those girls having an emotional breakdown, or were they just exploring their hormonal and emotional lives with each other and feeling out the boundaries of what was appropriate? Right? They were at a musical theater camp with a teacher who happened to be staying in their dorm. I wasn't their counselor, by the way. I just happened to be stuck in that same dorm with them this year, last year. 2 years ago, I had my own floor. That was great. That was the way it should have been. Because I wasn't their counselor. I was the instructor and I was the professional who could potentially hire them later on in life, right? Which is how that camp advertises itself. You will be working with professionals who are active working professionals. And I just remember it was like, no, this is the boundary. Like these girls were not having mental breakdowns. They were just being normal teenagers. They were just crying and figuring it out. They were just learning about what does it mean to listen to pop music. When I was young, it was a different pop singer, right? When I was young, it was Tori Amos, right? And before that, it would have been probably, when I was really young, it would have been probably Madonna, I guess, because I remember listening to a lot of Madonna and then switching over to like Sarah McLachlan, Tori Amos, Ani DiFranco, Alanis Morissette, Paula Cole, all of the Lilith Fair ladies, right? That's who I didn't, I sometimes wept, but a lot of times I just got real, wild and ragey, because that's what was popular when I was hormonal, right? I'm so glad right now that Chappell Roan is out there because I'm like, yes, that to me is like a singer-songwriter to vibe with. I mean, that's my style. What can I say? I'm just a little less sugary, right? I'm a little bit edgier. I love her so much. She's just oh so great. That's my style, I'm definitely way more on the garbage to Leonard Cohen worlds than I am necessarily to the bubblegum stuff, but it's all great. It's all exploring. But are we doing a disservice to teenagers by teaching them that every single little feeling is an emotional breakdown and that you're supposed to feel happy all the time? Are we? I don't know. You tell me. Where I see this, I read this article and I had to laugh. Because I resemble the article so much. I read an article last week in either the New York Times or the Washington Post, I can't remember, about how people are getting way too carried away with their animals. They are treating their animals like humans. They are putting their animals in clothes. They are taking their animals for walks in baby carriages. I saw two today on my walk. I saw two dogs in baby carriages. I get it if your dog is infirm, but like, it's like, yeah, people are like, why is my dog so depressed? I'm giving it food. I'm taking it for walks in baby carriages. And this person in the article who was a vet was like, your dog is depressed because you're not letting your dog be a dog, because you're trying to force your dog to be a human. Your dog is not a human. Your dog is a dog. So I just found that hilarious because, of course, that's how I was with my dog. I was definitely, Henry was a special dog. I will stand by that. He was practically human in certain ways. But at the end of the day, he was also a dog. And he wanted to be a dog, and that's what I wanted him to be. So I definitely, even though I put him in bow ties, it's true. And when I first got him, I would worry about him and get freaked out, like, oh God, he's gonna eat poison and die. The truth is that mainly Henry sat when I was gone. I would leave the window open in the living room. And this is when I got him, I lived on the second floor of a building on Crescent Heights Boulevard here in Los Angeles, which is a very busy street. And he would sit on the arm of the sofa looking out the window and just watch all day long, watch what was going on, what was happening. And literally, friends, because it's such a popular street, I would have friends like call me or text me and say, hey, I just saw Henry in the window. He was fine. It was fine. It was a dog. He just took care of himself. It was fine. He had toys. It was fine. There was water, you know. I made sure I took him out and played with him plenty. It was fine. So I wonder what I'm saying is, you know, have we lost the plot a little here? And have we lost the plot with our own selves? Are we thinking about ourselves too much? Are we hyper obsessed on things that really don't deserve obsession? Have we taken awareness and turned it into obsession? And does that then lead to dissatisfaction and breakdowns where we don't need a breakdown, right? So, what do we do? I don't think the idea is to get rid of our dreams or our desires or our hopes or our standards or our feelings for justice or even our desire to fit in. There's nothing wrong with wanting to fit into a society. That's how partially how we survive. I don't think that it's about getting rid of all of that because frankly, for most of us, I don't think that we are supposed to be desireless or that it's possible because then we're just wanting to be free of want. And, you know, I know there are certain drugs out there that that reduce a certain amount of that, right? Like I'm on a medication to manage my chronic pain. It's called low dose naltrexone. And it's naltrexone in high doses is used with alcoholics, drug addicts, not always alcoholics because it can be bad for heart on your liver, but for drug addicts, they use naltrexone in high doses because what it does is it shuts off your opiate receptors. And by shutting off your opiate receptors, then that addictive process for people who are addicts, what happens is they don't get that addictive hit when they take drugs. So then the addiction might still be in there as a neurological habit. It might be there as a mental habit. You might need a distraction. You might need to tear yourself away from it, but you don't get the literal chemical experience you once had. I take it at a low dose. And what that does is it resets my opiate receptors so that I don't know how it works for the chronic pain. I just know that it helps me not have chronic pain. But it also has taken away a certain amount of, like, I'll still want a piece of chocolate, but I'll eat some chocolate. And then all of a sudden it's like, nah, it's waxy now. I don't like it anymore. Like, I just don't need, like, I it's been interesting to watch in my own self. Like, if I have a glass of wine, it's like I don't get the same level of chemical pleasure. There's the first little bit of relaxation and the taste of wine because I do enjoy wine. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, I feel like I'm starting to just not like the taste anymore. And also my brain just got a little bit inebriated. Like I can see the inebriation, but I don't enjoy it. So it's just kind of changed my relationship to some of that. But I don't know if we're supposed to have that all the way. Right? If we're living in a desireless world, why would we do half the things we do? When you lose a certain amount of pleasure, right? And I'm saying that sometimes with pleasure comes disappointment. Sometimes with dreams and hopes and pleasure and desire comes disappointment, dissatisfaction, frustration, upset, anger. Why would we want to lose any of that when it's maybe more a little bit about just having a little more freedom to experience the feelings and engaging in them because they are part of the human experience without letting it rule us? And it's not that the desire necessarily rules us, but that we let the either A, addictive nature of it, or B, our minds take over. Right? What if we just said, no, thank you, not today. You know, when I was in an on again, off again, obsessive relationship, it became obsessive partially because I was in limerence. We've talked about limerence a lot on this show. Partially because the guy himself was addicted to me validating his ego. So every once in a while, he would call and we'd go out and he would let me think that we were getting back into a relationship. And then he would change his mind. So now, my thinking and feeling about where at the end of our relationship the tables turned. So, I mean, this went on for a few years, right? Where at first we were in love, and then we were both like, it was way too high stakes, and we both kind of screwed up and freaked out, but then we just couldn't quit each other. And so then I was like, oh, well, I think we're meant to be together. And he was like, yeah, maybe we are. Oh, no, we're not meant to be together. And then he would come around again. And then no. And then he would come around. And finally, at the end, when he came around, I was like, yeah, I had done a lot of work, and I'm going to get to the work I did to help understand what I'm talking about and why it's no different with an obsessive relationship or limerence than it is with our minds fighting ourselves and creating this general malaise that a lot of people are walking around with right now. By the time we were at the end of the relationship, the tables turned and he wanted me. And I was like, wow, I'm not that attracted to you anymore. Now I could only see the things that I found unattractive about him, that he sweat a lot. I'm sorry, but he did. I know that's not fair. Some people sweat a lot. If I loved him, it wouldn't have been a problem, right? But he was so sweaty all the time. And I was like, wow, you're really sweaty. He's like, yeah, I'm a hot guy. He just was so sweaty all the time, you guys. Before, he'd always been sweaty. I loved it when we were first dating, but by the end, I was like, yeah, no, I can't deal with how much you sweat. I just can't. It's just, I'm a little grossed out by it. Why was I grossed out by it? Because I wasn't in love with him, and we had not created a commitment such that I was willing to live with the sweatiness because I had committed to him. Because suddenly he was saying he wanted a commitment, but I had started looking at how he was actually treating me. Maybe he really did want a commitment, but he didn't really want someone as ambitious as I was. And he didn't really want me to outshine him. And I know that because every time I would, he would freak out and leave. That was part of his issue with me. Maybe if we had worked together through that earlier on, in the end, I just don't think he was really a match. We had a connection, but he wasn't a real match. And I actually have discussed this person who I deeply respect and care about and love. I just don't want in my life anymore. When I was talking, if you have heard me talk about Prophecy Rock, and if you heard me on Jay and Raven's show when I was talking about the relationship, this was the guy. I was deeply connected to him, and I do care very deeply that he has the fulfilling life he's meant to have for his human life at this time. But he's not my husband, right? He wasn't my husband. And so I had done a lot of work looking at how he had actually treated me and what it was actually doing to my brain chemistry and how I actually saw myself and what I actually wanted out of my life and who I actually was and whether or not we actually fit together in that way. And at the end, I had to admit what I wanted out of life, he didn't grant me. In order for me to be with him, I didn't have the freedom to be my whole self. And so it wasn't worth it. The connection wasn't worth it. And I'll tell you, I know that is true because after the fact, I met a man with whom I am my full and whole self, for better and for worse. And he doesn't love all of it. He doesn't love every single little thing about me, but he loves me. And so when I do things that bother him, either he ignores them or he says, Aaron, would you please not multitask so much that blah, 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 because that's one of the things I do he hates. Or we talk it through, or he just accepts it because he loves me. Right? And same. So I'm saying it's not perfect, but if it's not a deal breaker, he doesn't do my deal breakers. So it's like, well, is it really the worst thing in the world if sometimes he worries about certain things? Like he wants me to double check all the locks because sometimes I'm forgetful. We're kind of opposites on that. It's probably pretty helpful to have somebody be like, oh, by the way, did you lock all the doors? Yeah, let me go check. Nope, didn't. Forgot. Yep, living here in the middle of Los Angeles. I should be careful. And then I say that out loud in public. Somebody might just show up someday to our house and be like, oh, Aaron forgets to lock the doors, huh? Yep. Thank God I'm not a professional cat or dog sitter, right? Okay. Anyway, it's no different with our thoughts. It's no different with ourselves, right? If there's something that's a deal breaker, yeah, we address that. If you are ill or you have a real thing to work through, I'm talking about a disease or a chronic pain, or an eating disorder or an addiction, or you're in an unrequited love relationship and you need help with that. There's no shame in any of that. But there comes a point where, and this is how I did it with that guy. I actually set timers and I would obsess about him on person. I mean on purpose. So because I would find him invading my thoughts and invading my dreams. And I couldn't, like, I just didn't want him to rule me like that anymore. I didn't, when I first met him, I wanted to be ruled. I wanted the experience of being ruled like that because I wanted to feel alive in that certain way. Like, oh my God, like I'm so in love and I'm taken over and I just can't help it. And my every cell in my body's in on fire and I'm in love and I'm so attracted because it felt real. I was trying to make myself real. But it wasn't real. It was just a story that I was drumming up in my mind. And then my chemicals, my hormones responded to what my mind was feeding it. And the chemicals responded with neurological patterning. And then I developed a habit. I was already alive. I'm already an alive, passionate being. I was giving myself that experience. If I want to make myself feel sexually turned on, I can do it. If I want to make myself feel in love, I can do it. If I want to make myself feel really annoyed at my husband, I can do that. I'm good at that one. If I want to make myself cry, I can do it. Yeah, sure, because I took a lot of acting classes, but anybody can do it. Start telling yourself a story about the experience you want to have in life. But Aaron, no, when I see a sad news story, I don't want to have that experience. Are you sure? Of course, sometimes we want to have a sad experience. Sometimes I want to watch a drama. Sometimes I want to feel something. Sometimes I want to make sure I'm still a compassionate human being and not a psychopath. Sure, of course, I do. We don't get to control all of our thoughts. We don't get to control all of our feelings, but we can orient ourselves. So here I was obsessed with this guy. And one of the things I started to do is I would say, okay, rather than whenever the intrusive thought would show up about him, about, oh, I love him and he doesn't love me back right now. Why? When we're destined to be together, blah, blah, blah. Have you heard that one before? I would say, you know what? Right now, I'm rehearsing. Right now, I'm about to do yoga and I want to be really present to my body in yoga. So at 10:30, I'm going to give myself 30 minutes to obsess about this. And I would give myself 30 minutes, but I'll tell you, like, because I would wanted to be present to it. I would start thinking about it. And I would sometimes let myself have a little fantasy or go off on a sad story or negative use my imagination to get negative. But a lot of times it was also just like, well, that took 7 minutes. Okay, now what? I guess I'm done. And I would be done. And I began to see that actually I had a lot more freedom and a lot more choice than I thought. And then actually, sometimes I would think, like, you know, I've got this idea that he's the love of my life and he's the one. If it doesn't work out with him, it would be some great tragedy. Where does that come from? I mean, it comes, of course, from, you know, Wuthering Heights, the novel. Comes a little bit from The Time Traveler's Wife, the novel. Oh. It comes a little bit from Anne of Green Gables, although she didn't feel that way. She just ended up with her childhood sweetheart. Oh my God. It comes from the novels I love. I'm writing a novel, right? I saw it. I saw that I was writing stories. And then I was buying into them as if they were real. They weren't real, they were stories. And I love stories. I'm a writer. You all know that. I love stories. I love funny stories. I love romantic stories. I love happy stories, inspirational stories, right? I love drama. I love thrillers. I love it all. I don't love it all. I don't like things that are too soapy or for me. I like a little bit of meat on the bone, but I was writing a story. Well, how is any of it any different? How is any of it? Anytime you're taken away from the experience you want to have of life, and yes, of course, we're going to get sick. We're going to have accidents. We're going to make mistakes. But you can be liberated there too. I think I've told you all the story of the last car accident I ever had. Knock on wood, touch iron. Tocca ferro, as they say in Italy. When I realized I couldn't stop the accident from happening, I tried applying the brakes and being as smart a driver as I could because I wanted to prevent damage to my friends in the car with me and to the girl who was in the other car. But when I realized there was nothing I could do, I relaxed. I said, "Thank you, God. If this is my time, then I surrender, God. I surrender. Thank you for this beautiful life. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you." And do you know, even though both of our cars were totaled, and one of my friends hurt her neck, and my other friend maybe broke a toe or something, I walked away injury-free. And my car was totaled. It was a brand new car. It was less than a week old. But I had gotten such a good deal on it that I actually made money on the deal and had enough money for the down payment on the next car. And I'm sorry for my friends getting hurt. I'm sorry for that girl in that other car. And I'm sorry the whole thing happened. But I didn't have to give it more, any more meaning than that. It was an accident. An accident happened. And I did learn a lot about not following a big truck too close. The accident happened because I was following a very big truck. And he didn't stop at a four-way. There were lights that were on. He didn't stop, and I didn't stop because I couldn't see that the lights were out because I was just a little too close to him. So I now drive really far away. I don't, people. I drive far enough away that people get ahead of me and cut me off all the time just to keep going the same mileage because it's California. It's like, well, where do you think you're going? You're not going to get anywhere. I always end up seeing those people at the stoplight 2 seconds later, but I've learned. I don't ever want to leave myself vulnerable to that kind of experience again. I don't want to be at fault for that kind of accident again. So I learned. But that's it. That's it. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful, right? So when it comes to being the person you always wanted to be, what does that look like? What does that look like? When I was little, I grew up watching Golden Girls with my grandma. And I love Golden Girls. I still love Golden Girls. I sometimes will spend an hour. You can watch it on Hulu, but I will sometimes just go down the Instagram Golden Girls rabbit hole, watching all of the fun clips and the videos people have cut together of Dorothy delivering like just scorching one-liners or right? I love that show. Now, similarly, then when I was a little bit older, teenager, young woman, I loved Sex and the City for very similar reasons. And I also love Anne of Green Gables, and this one's controversial, but Little House on the Prairie, right? And now it doesn't have to be what media do you love to tell you who you are. It's just that's a handy way to understand who you are, right? A lot of people love Eat, Pray, Love, and they want to be just like how Elizabeth Gilbert was in that book, spiritual and invested in the pleasures of life and exploring who they are through their spiritual life and through their pleasures in life, right? A lot of people love Taylor Swift because she gets what it's like to be just this feminine, to embrace the divine feminine, to embrace the things of home and hearth and love and relationships and frustration in relationships and what it's like to be alive in that particular way, right? I am really, really interested in us taking on the patriarchy by embracing exactly who I want to be and how I see myself and orienting myself there. If you follow me on Instagram at all recently or TikTok, recently I did a video about being a wild woman. Because when I was little, I grew up with my mom read this book called Women Who Run with the Wolves by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. And therefore, I read that book too. And I love wild women. I love Xena. Oh, and speaking of another person I loved growing up, right? I think there's so many different ways to be a wild woman. And I don't mean being wild for the sake of being lost. I don't mean being wild because you're succumbing to what they're doing to you. I mean, embracing your deep, true nature, connecting to your community, standing up for what you believe in, and then doing it the way you want to do it, right? If that means you, like my mom, you don't want to wear makeup and you want to wear your cute little Birkenstocks every day and your North Face outfit, and you're a nature gal and you just want to go outside and walk and stop at your favorite bench and listen to the birds sing, and that's how you are and you're glorious that way, awesome. If you're like me and you're like, oh no, I love my, you know, I like to experiment with my hair and I like to wear really interesting outfits and put together clothes that make me feel a certain kind of way, great, right? Sorry about the noise outside if you can hear that during my broadcast. You know, they changed our garbage days and my office looks out onto the parking lot where, sorry, is all I can say. I'm bringing it, maybe you can't hear, but I'm bringing it up in case you can. So I opened with, like, every time our mind fights with itself, we don't have to engage, because I wonder what would happen if we gave ourselves license and agency to be ourselves, whatever that looks like. And it doesn't have to be divorced from society, but it doesn't have to be, you know, chained to society either. You know, like, it's cool if you want, like, I've been looking at my face lately. I know I talk about my face. Like, when have you not been looking at your face, Erin? And I've been debating whether or not I should do Botox or fillers. I've never done any of it. And I think there's nothing wrong with whatever you want to do. I'm pro-choice about it. You want to do it, great. You don't want to do it, great. What I object to is the idea that I'm supposed to look a certain way. Right? And I keep thinking, you know, what if it was just great to age? What if it was? What if it was sexy even? Just a different kind of sexy, right? What if I decided for myself that I actually really love art, which is true. I love art. Anyone who's ever traveled with me knows how much I love art. And I love to go to museums, and I especially love when I'm in Italy visiting my in-laws to go to the museums there, because they've got all that great Renaissance work, right? All of these glorious bodies, naked, semi-nude bodies that are not, sometimes they're toned, sometimes they're fleshy. They're all different shapes and sizes, and they're all kind of beautiful. I mean, they're not all beautiful. Sometimes you see certain religious paintings or certain paintings where they're depicting a horror, of course. Someone ill, you know, thinking about paintings I've seen depicting the bubonic plague. But I mean, like, just seeing bodies, when you're looking at like pastoral paintings of bodies like lazing about and little cherubs coming around, it's like they're just beautiful. What if I just decided for myself, because I can, like, no, I'm good. You know, I'm good. I want to work out. I don't want to work out. Whatever that is, right? Now, I talk about that stuff a lot because I live in LA. It's so present. But what if it was the same thing about any of it, right? What if you said, okay, I'm really freaked out about the economy. What if you decided for yourself what you needed out of life financially, and you began to determine a plan based on the system in which you operate for yourself financially? And then every time your mind came up and said, I need to freak out about money, you said, do I? I've got a plan. Following my plan. Do I really need to freak out about this? Do I need to do something? Is there a bill I forgot about? Let me just scan. You know, do I need to do a little bit of work to prepare for my test? Like, right? There's a difference between awareness and that habit of freaking out. That habit. Okay? What if you're freaked out about whatever it is, right? You can say, wait, do I need to? Do I need to really, like, engage at the level where I'm giving myself distress? Could I just say no, thank you? right? Glorious. What can you do today for yourself, for your own loving, amazing, kick-ass, badass, wild self, or not so wild? You don't have to be wild. You can be perfectly happy being a homebody and totally domesticated if it's true to you. I'm saying, what can you do for yourself today? Not to hyper focus on yourself. I mean, self-care is great. Massages are great, whatever. Sometimes a massage is self-care. Sometimes not getting a massage is self-care because of that financial thing we talked about, right? I'm talking about how could you talk to your self differently so that you stopped obsessing over things that don't deserve your obsession. What do you really want to think about in a day? You know, do you really want to be thinking about your cholesterol all day? What would you rather be doing with your mental space and time and energy? Maybe you don't know. Maybe you're like, Aaron, I'm so used to worrying about my cholesterol. I don't know if I would be comfortable doing anything else. And I would encourage you just to try. Say, oh God, my cholesterol last time I checked it 7 months ago was 201. Oh my God. I'm not saying we don't deserve to, like, okay, maybe eat a little less peanut butter, whatever that is, go on statins, whatever it is for you, take your supplements, whatever. I'm just saying, are you dying right now? And call 911. Right? I'm like one of those voicemails when you call the doctor and they say, if this is an emergency, call 911. If not, please listen to the following message. What could you do for yourself today to have just a little bit more of the human stuff you want and a little bit less of the human stuff you want? And sometimes that might look like you saying, oh, well, so what? Fuck it. Sometimes that might look like you saying, no, I want to care about this. This is what I care about. This is what I want to engage in. I want to engage in something meaningful, not something that worries me, but something meaningful that I'm passionate about. That's the best, right? That's the best. What do you want your life to look like? Can you just point yourself in that direction? And then just not give a fuck about the rest of it. Just for today. And if not, if today is too long, just for right now. Right? Just for right now. If you need help with that, I'd love to help you. You right? So that you can turn that monologue into a dialogue. I have room for all of it. I don't mind people asking me the same questions over and over again. I can't tell you how many times people call me on One to Listen and say, I'm so sorry for asking the same question. I'm like, I get it. I get it. I ask the same question over and over again too. My husband gets so annoyed with me being like, does this dress look okay? This dress or this dress? This dress or this dress? This shirt or this shirt? This shirt or this shirt? I don't care. I'm just going to keep asking him because he'll keep answering. I don't mind at all. But I can help. Right? I can help. So if you need help and you want me to be that person, come find me at onetolisten.com/Aaron, okay? I'm going to be there almost all day today. A lot of the day tomorrow, in the afternoon, all weekend, come find me. I'd love to help you turn this monologue into a dialogue and maybe even to a little, you know, musical theater dance number. I don't know, whatever works for you, okay? But like, call yourself out a little. I don't mean meanly. I just mean, you know, if your brain is running away with you, if the dish is running away with a spoon, just be like, wait. Do I really want my brain to run away with me? Could I find some techniques to help me not do that? What would I rather think about instead? I'd actually rather go make a Pinterest board about cool shoes. I don't know, whatever, right? Okay. All right. Until next week, thank you so much for tuning in. I love you. I'll talk to you. Come find me at onetolisten.com/Erin and go buy Bad Sugar Baby. It's available on Amazon right now. Bye.